Okay, so we are kicking off the first of Reading the Royal Diary series.
Mm-hmm.
So the first book is Elizabeth I, Red Rose of the House of Tudor. In a series of diary entries, Princess Elizabeth, the 11-year-old daughter of Henry VIII, celebrates holidays and birthdays, relives her mother's execution, revels in her studies, and agonizes over her father's health.
Okay. Who wrote it?
It is by Catherine Lasky, and she's also written multiple books for the Royal Diary series, too.
Okay.
So anyways,
do we want to give, like, background of why we're doing this a bit? I don't know.
Sure. So this whole thing started because when the series was first put out by Scholastic, I was in elementary school, and I already had a bit of a royal kick, and anything that said royal, and I was like, ooh, I'm into this, and mm-hmm. I like the idea, and I was already a fan of history books, like eyewitness history books, so this was sort of the next evolution in my love of history.
Okay.
So bringing it to life for me via fictitious diaries of famous royal women.
And for me, being the younger sibling, I just wanted to read whatever you were reading, but then by extension, I found myself really enjoying these books too.
That's usually how it goes.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little like, you know, part nostalgia kick, a little bit of a book review, and then historical overview too, right?
Yeah, so let's talk about the book itself, and then I'll give you a little bit more information, because she actually did a really good job of writing this with, like, actual factual things that happened to the real Elizabeth I, and then sort of planting the seeds of what would happen in her, like, grown-up life.
Cool.
So I'll get into that bit more, but first, share with me your thoughts upon rereading this book.
I mean, so I remember I really did enjoy this book when I first read it. This is going to sound really dumb, but when I first read it, I just remember thinking, like, wow, like, her school sounds so much more interesting and informative than whatever the bump I'm learning in school.
Was because they would be like, let's learn about astronomy. Let's go on to the astronomy tower and look at the constellations and then make costumes of the constellations.
Exactly. Like, peak, like, humanist education. Yeah, dumbass me, really young, being, like, a lot younger, really wanted to go and do that. No, I mean, I think the thing for me was that I didn't remember a lot of the detail, like, the minutiae of the book, but I remember some of, like, the overarching things of, like, what was gotten into. I remember who the main cast of characters were and how they were generally rendered.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think that one of the things that I really appreciate is that you really did have, like, a pretty accurate sense of what palace life would have been like for her. But I think she also, like, Lasky really captured, like, what it sounds to be a somewhat overwrought 11 to 13-year-old. Because who was not a little bit overwrought when you were in, like, middle school? We all were, even if you were also a princess of England.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated how it's very difficult when you're writing anything, you know, set in the past, and you're writing it like it's a diary, right? So she's writing her first-person narration about her life. And, you know, the way that she, Catherine Lasky, was able to weave in historical information about the time without it being awkward. So Elizabeth saying, oh, I'm really glad we're at this palace because there's less rats and there's juniper bushes and those are great for brushing your teeth. And then you as a reader are like, oh, I didn't know you chomped on sticks to brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be really weird if she was like, dear diary, today I'm brushing my teeth with this. Like, think about your own journal entries. Would you be like, dear diary, I'm so glad I have Crest.
No. Yeah, exactly.
It'd be really weird and awkward, so.
I know, and I think, like, that's also, I mean, aside from the fact that Henry VIII's court was pretty much, like, a rotating frat house.
Yeah.
Like, we are going to trash this palace with
and
as many.
And then move on to the next one.
Yeah, we're going to have a bunch of lit parties, and then no one's going to clean up, and then we're just going to.
And then we're like, why is it so dirty? Let's move.
Exactly. Like, truly living the life, I guess. Yes.
Yeah. So, I appreciated how she sort of woven those historical things And then also, I feel like despite, to your point too, about it being very in character, like, you know, an 11-year-old would be, like, a middle schooler. So, like, it was age appropriate in terms of, like, what she's going through, and there are relatable things, like, you know, you want to have fun with your friends, you know, you get lonely, you want your parents to like you.
Yeah. Or your one remaining parent.
Or your one remaining parent because your
other
parent is had their head chopped off and you're trying to find out what happened to them.
All the drama of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought it was really good, too, in terms of establishing, like, quote-unquote known facts about Elizabeth, so get interweaving stuff that either will come up in the future when Elizabeth is queen, or alluding to it anyways, without saying, like, you know, in a footnote being like, Elizabeth dealt with this when she was a grown-up.
Yeah, well, and also, too, it's like, you have to contrive certain circumstances for the reader. Like, there probably was not a yeoman at like the Tower of London who was like, oh, I was there the day that your mother got her head chopped off, and I'm going to tell you all about it.
Well, and it's like she, but it's true though, in terms of like Elizabeth would have had to try to find it out herself, because when after Anne Boleyn was killed, it was like a no-no. Like, we do not talk about her.
She never existed except for this clear, like, product of her existence, this child.
Yeah. Well, and I think it was sort of like the explicit facts of the circumstances of her mother's death weren't actually told to her. Like, people wouldn't want to talk about it, obviously.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons. Like, one, it would get back to Henry, and they're like, why are you talking about, like, this traitorous whore?
Yeah.
And then other people would be, like, very superstitious, being like, you don't talk about dead people, because especially if they died under, like, terrible circumstances, what if it happened to you? If anything, what probably would have stuck with Elizabeth more is actually the death of her stepmother, Catherine Howard, who is only a few years older than her. And she actually talks about that in the book, how they try to appease her spirit by, you know, playing ninepins with her.
Yeah, and I think, and I feel like that's part of, like, the tragedy of Elizabeth, too, is because, I mean, she was, like, what, not even, like, 3 years old when her mother died?
Yeah, she was only 2.
Yeesh.
So she was like 2 turning 3. And then, it's like, but obviously because she remembered ish her mother, but not really. So then it was almost like she wanted to be in her father's presence, but obviously he didn't want her because she's not the male heir that he wanted. Yeah. And she's a reminder of, like, how he basically ripped apart his former life, you know, marriage to Catherine Aragon, how he was, like, loved throughout Europe as, like, an uprighteous person in the eyes of the Pope and the Church. Mm-hmm. And he, like, obliterated all this to marry Anne Boleyn, only not to get the son.
Yeah.
And now you have this daughter who's a reminder of, like, how you threw your entire life away.
Yeah,
so, like, not being like, oh, poor Henry, but I'm like, from that understanding, I would be like, I probably wouldn't want to see her around a lot either. So Elizabeth was frequently just shipped off to live at Hatfield Palace by herself. And she was sort of forgotten, too. Like, they forgot to pay the people.
God, it's like when your parents probably forgot you that one time at, like, to pick you up from school, but, like, taken up to 11.
Well, it's more like her dad didn't forget to pick her up from after school. He just didn't want to pick her up from after school.
And, like, he never showed up.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's so, like, I'm gonna call your babysitter.
Yeah, pretty much. So, with that being said, though, like, one of the big relationships in this story is with her governess, Kat.
Yeah, Kat Ashley. She was, like, an actual person, right?
Yeah. No, she was. Actually, I have information about you.
Ooh.
Yeah. Did you know, and this is cool, her governess was actually was a relation of Anne Boleyn.
Oh.
Yes. And because of this, obviously she has, like, familial interest in Elizabeth.
That makes a lot of sense why she was around for so long. It was, like, high key, like hopefully anybody would be, like, high key invested in the child they've been entrusted to.
But she was more so because, like, she was a highly educated woman herself. And her So she actually was one of the main pushers for Elizabeth, like, becoming so educated. So that is one of those things that is highlighted in the book a lot, but we know is very true, which is that she always was, like, with Elizabeth, like, she had an aptitude for languages. So, and Cat Ashley taught Elizabeth astronomy, geography, history, mathematics, languages. Some of those languages included Latin, French, Spanish, Italian, Flemish. She knew some Greek and secretly learned Welsh, and she even knew a now-defunct Cornish dialect.
Holy Moses.
Yeah. Elizabeth spent her time studying the history and the classics under renowned scholars, all of whom were charmed by the precocious princess. She used to like translating things for funsies.
So oh, that my was, God.
And that's how you would learn the language. You would learn it by being like, I read this in Latin, I'm going to translate it to Greek, and now I'm going to translate it back into Latin. So yeah. Doing double translations. So she, Elizabeth and her younger brother Edward, would write their letters to each other in Latin. And shit. That's, well, and this is where, like, this is to Cat Ashley's tutelage, because to your point, she could have been very like, I'll just take the money and leave it at, oh, she knows needlepoint, she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, no, like, I'm not gonna waste like this brain that I have. And actually, sources state Cat accustomed Elizabeth to elaborate code of politeness of subservience to her elders. Elizabeth herself praised Cat's early devotion to her studies by stating, Cat took great labor and pain in bringing of me up in honesty and learning.
Uh-huh.
So, and Cat actually was also a protector of Elizabeth, not just in terms of like looking out for her in terms of like her education and stuff, but when it came to like the court intrigues and stuff, Cat was sort of her woman on the ground.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and obviously she was very, like I said, she's very protective of Elizabeth, and that comes out too in the book because Cat's like frantic about poisonings, you know, she's always like, you know, freaking out about poisonings and like
it took us multiple hours to go and get installed here at Whitehall because Cat kept on checking and wiping everything down for poisoning.
Yeah, and it's and it is actually like grounded, like in terms of poisonings being like quote-unquote a thing. Catherine Medici in France a little later from this, like, there was that whole thing of her being accused of being a poisoner. Lucrezia Borgia, you know, does she have those secret vial powder rings kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was really into poisons.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it probably wasn't poison that was killing you. It was just the fact that things were very unhygienic and, like, germs were everywhere.
Yeah, and you but probably like, had, like, a shitty diet, too.
Yeah, but, you know, you drank bad water, and then they're like, it's poison! But you're like, I just drank water.
Yeah.
So Cat actually, was, like, stayed with Elizabeth through, like, out her childhood, young adulthood, and then when Elizabeth finally became queen, she was made First Lady of the Bedchamber, and her husband was appointed Master of the Jewel House, so very trusted positions.
Okay.
And she was very influential as a source of information for the queen and as means of asking favors. So if you wanted to talk to Elizabeth or like needed Elizabeth's attention on something, you went to Cat. And Cat would be like,
she was like her point person.
Pretty much. Like, so Elizabeth didn't have to deal with nonsense. You would go to Cat first and then, like, I'm just imagining, like, how, I don't know who, like, Beyonce's personal assistant is, but it's like, you do not talk to Beyonce directly.
You talk to the person who then talks to Beyonce for you.
Yeah, pretty much. And she actually died in 1565, and it's sad because Elizabeth, she had been queen for a little while then, but, like, it wasn't like she stayed with her, like, you know, for a long period of time in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, like, in this sort of young, like, obviously from her childhood all the way to being, like, a young woman. But
well, cause
she became queen in 1558. So in 65, 65, she died. So
not even 10 years.
Yeah. But I feel like it's almost like, who knows, you know, maybe Kat was almost like, she's okay now. Like, Elizabeth is safe. She is secure.
I can go. Oh, my God. You make it sound like she was super decrepit, though.
No, I don't think she was decrepit. I mean, I don't know how old. I don't know. Like, I didn't write down when Kat was born. But, like, I feel like she was, like, a couple, she was obviously in her 20s when Elizabeth was in her, like, mid-teens.
You know what? Just for historical accuracy's sake, I'm just gonna quickly go on Google Cat Ashley.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing, too, though. Like, some people's birthdays, like, nobody actually even knows when Anne Boleyn was born properly.
Well, it's because, like, why would you...
Yeah. Cat Ashley is a circa 1502. We don't even know exactly when she was born.
Well, that's the whole point. It's because, number one, why would we need to know when a woman is born?
True.
And number two, like, that's their attitude back in the day. And then number two, you don't know who's going to become famous until after they're dead. Like, you know, Cat Ashley was, like, a genteel, like lower noble person.
Yeah.
She's not someone of note. It's not like she was, like, born, like, the future princess or something. Then you're like, I better know when she was born.
Yeah, actually.
Because, like, you don't know that certain people will be famous until way down the line. And then it's, like, retroactively trying to find out information about them. Nobody kept it because they weren't a big deal at the time.
History's wild.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to some other facts that were presented in this book and how they actually were historically accurate.
Okay.
So at 12, this is true.
Okay.
Elizabeth did manage to upset Henry, who banished her from his presence.
Okay, like, quick question. Yeah. So, like, I went and I watched the first 2.5 seasons of The Tudors. Okay, I lied. I watched, like, the half of the first season of The Tudors.
Fair enough.
And I know a little bit about Henry VIII. Was it true that he actually did have, like, the super violent mood swings? Like, was he as bad as, like, pop culture depicts him? Like, what's the record?
So, okay. So, basically, Henry... So, there's, like, the two versions of Henry VIII, right? So, there's, like... The one who's the lesser-known Henry, but the Tudors tried to make him exist, which is Hot Henry.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, the Henry VIII that most everybody associates and knows, which is, like, fat, like, crazy tyrant dude.
Wasn't he, like, only really, like, the fat, crazy tyrant dude? Not to go and imply that if you are fat, you are going to be a tyrant. But,
no.
You know. Like, wasn't he only that for, like, the last decade or so of his life, really?
Yeah. So, basically, up until... This is where there's, like, a lot of 1536, a lot of different events just sort of crash into each other. So
okay.
Up until this point, Henry is, like, a really tall, like, active, athletic, good-looking dude. And he's actually, like, really sociable, and he likes hearing about different ideas, and he likes people to, like, challenge him and debate with him. Like, one of the reasons why he actually liked Anne Boleyn is because, number one, when he pursued her, she was playing actually hard to get, but not in a, like, you know, a bad way, but she was playing it in a way where she was, like, genuinely, like, no, you are a dick and ditch,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not gonna throw my entire life and reputation, which is all I have as a woman, just so you can be, like, nailed her. So she would put him off and was like, mm-hmm. no. He liked that about her, but he also liked the fact that she, like, was reading about, you know, the different books that were coming out regarding, like, Reformation and, like, how we should be viewing religion and what's the role of people when it comes to their own religious life, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so he liked the rigor of debate and stuff. So he liked that about Anne Boleyn.
Mm-hmm.
So he would, obviously, if he was, like, a raging control freak tyrant person, he wouldn't be down for that, right?
No.
But what happens in 1536 is he has a major jousting accident.
Okay.
So what ends up happening is he has severe concussion. So they actually think for at one point, like, he's dead.
Wow.
Like, he's out for a few hours, like, gone.
Holy.
He burst a varicose ulcer in his left leg, which he had injured previously, but it healed quickly in 1527. But now it wasn't so lucky, and ulcers appeared on both legs, causing incredible pain, and the ulcers never fully healed. So he had constant severe infection as a result.
So pretty much he had, like, the highest level of concussion you could have.
Yeah.
And he's probably had, like, other concussions too leading up
to yeah, like, because he would joust regularly and stuff like that. So just imagine in terms of, like, a football player and how what we know about concussion or hockey players and concussion levels and how that affects, like, their brains as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
So then also the twofold them, because he was in so much pain, he couldn't do the physical activities he liked to do.
Mm-hmm.
He compensated for the pain by eating and drinking excessively.
You know, a coping mechanism.
Yeah, which alters your mood greatly.
Mm-hmm.
So his growing obesity and constant infections continued to concern Parliament. The jousting accident, which had prevented him from enjoying his favorite pastime, also prohibited him from exercising. His final suit of armor in 1544. This book is supposed to be written in 1544.
Yeah, he gets lifted onto the horse in, like, the very beginning of, yeah, like, the book.
Yeah, so, and they're, like, talking about how it's, like, a big mass of armor and silver, yeah, and he's, like, shining like the sun. Well, 3 years before his death suggests he weighed at least 300 pounds.
Oh.
His waist becoming expanded from a very slim 32 inches to 52 inches.
Holy
Moses. By 1546, Henry had become so large that he required wooden chairs to carry him around and hoists to lift him. He needed to be lifted onto his horse, and his leg continued to deteriorate. It is this image of a morbidly obese king that most people recall when asked about Henry VIII. The endless pain was undoubtedly a factor in his metamorphosis into a bad-tempered, unpredictable, irascible monarch. Persistent chronic pain can severely impact quality of life. Even today, with absences of modern medicine, Henry must have been faced with excruciating daily pain, and that must have impacted his temperament. His latter years were a far cry from the valiant, charismatic prince of 1509. So his last days, he had extreme pain, leg injuries needed to be cauterized by doctors, so they would, like, take flaming pokers and try to, like, burn the flesh away that
so
was
basically
rotting.
He was getting, like, branded on a regular basis.
Yeah. And he had a chronic stomach ache.
Oh, my God.
And he actually died age 55 because of renal and liver failure.
I mean...
So in 1536, this crazy accident happens. Anne Boleyn is pregnant with their second or third child,
mm-hmm,
and because of this, she goes into shock. She has early labor, so she miscarries.
Yeah.
What then they tell him would have been a boy.
Oof.
And, like, it's just all these horrible things just happen in this 1 year. Then it's almost like whether because of the concussion or just, like, all this stuff just ramming to a head, Henry is just like, I am pulling the brakes off this, like, runaway train, and the only way he can think about doing this is, like, how do I go back and make this not happen?
Yeah.
How do I unwife Anne Boleyn so I can have my life back?
Yeah, he put all the blame on her.
Yeah, because, like, obviously, you know, blah, blah, blah has nothing to do with him. But that's why, like, in this book, like, they just go on and on about, like, how his health is, like, going downhill, mm-hmm, and, like, how... And Elizabeth's really concerned about it, and she, like, wants to try to help and do this stuff, but it's basically the writing's on the wall. Like, there's,
yeah,
nothing to be done.
And, I mean, like, that's the thing, too, is, like, these are the final, like, 3 years of his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's when he's at, like, his absolute lowest you can go before, you know, dying.
Well, and what's really sad, though, is that... She, so in this time, because, like I said, she was banished when she was 12 years old, this actually made her become more loyal to her father,
oh,
you know, because that's exactly how dysfunctional relationships work, you,
yeah,
know, you want to be closer to the person that's pushing you away.
Uh-huh.
And, so Elizabeth and her brother in this book, they are friends, they stick up for each other, Edward gets her the monkey.
Yeah, weren't they only, like... I don't know how many, like, she was born in 1533. He was born in, like, 1537-ish.
Yeah, so she was, like, 3 years old. Because his mother, Jane Seymour, married Henry VIII, like, within a few hours of Anne Boleyn having her head chopped off.
Was it oh my God.
Like,
I thought it was,
or like maybe a day.
Wow.
Like, literally, like, what a difference 24 hours makes.
Oh, my God.
So...
I don't feel like... I'm like, listen, like, on one hand, like, you can't go and get mad at a sis who sees an opportunity is gonna go and take it, but damn, Jane Seymour.
I know. I mean, that... watch out for the Jane Seymours. Everybody thinks it's the Anne Boleyns who are, like, flirty and outrageous. No. It's always the quiet, I'm such a nice person one who's, like, sneaky, sneaky. Yeah, but, like, so she and Edward, they had, like, a pretty decent relationship. Like I told you, they were, like, super nerds writing to each other back and forth,
uh-huh,
in their like Latin code language and stuff. God, but yeah, it's interesting too. In the book, at one point Elizabeth gets pissed off and she like yells a vile oath at the rat, at the monkey, mm-hmm. and her dad busts her.
Oh my God, yeah. That was a very high drama scene.
Well, because you were just like, is she going to get banished again? Every single time she does something, you're like, is she going to get banished
again? And which is pretty much like her version of go to your room, but worse.
But worse. It's like, but go to your room indefinitely. Like a palace that is far away and I may forget about you for years. But Henry and Elizabeth, this is where they're very similar. So they both had like Tudor red hair and they were pale and we're not really sure about her eye color. Maybe they were like light brown or something. Mm. But she was infamous with her colorful language, a characteristic she was said to inherit from her father. So they both like to swear like sailors.
Amazing. So basically whenever I go and I drop a doozy, I can just go and say, this one's for you, Lizzie.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, yeah. No, she had a vile tongue.
Amazing. As they like to
say. An accursed tongue.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Yeah, so it's interesting, too. Like, another thing that they talk about is about her love of like pageantry and showing off, you know, like,
yeah, all those flipping balls and all those like displays.
Oh yeah.
And well, the ones are so scandalous too.
Oh yeah. Well, they like to dress in their costumes and stuff, right? And so that was definitely a big component of when people think about like Elizabethan age and Elizabethan times. What do we immediately think about? We're like, good old William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But it's because she was always a major patron of the stage and drama flourished under her support.
Yeah.
Initially, there was a certain amount of class conflict. Conflict arose over production of plays because puritanical Elizabethan middle class tried to shut down London theaters on the basis of their immorality. Basically, yeah. If your butts are in theater seats, they're not in pews. So you're bad people.
Well, like, wasn't that also a thing, too, where, like, she was especially, like, really crafty, though, which is like, okay, my sister Mary is, like, was super Catholic and all of that, and so I've been able to go and rally, like, the Protestant and, in particular, the Puritan support, so I will placate them by playing to some of their things, but actually, I want to go and wear flashy clothes, I want to eat rich food, and I want to go on the town.
Oh, yeah, I know. Elizabeth knew how to play the game very well. Like, okay. So this happened, so it's more like when she's queen, she obviously doesn't want, like, the middle class to get angry with her. But they say, you know, we'll shut down the theaters during times of epidemics.
Of course.
But we need, she liked to invite them, the theater companies, to her palace. So they were like, well, we need to practice before we perform before the queen. So the best way to practice is if we do it at the Globe Theater or whatever.
Oh my
gosh. So that's the way they're like sort of got away with it.
I see.
And there's another thing too in this book. Is basically Elizabeth is a little show-off.
Yeah, she is.
She is a show-off.
She is so, like, here's the thing.
she's very precocious.
I was literally just about to say she's so precocious.
But, like, she is a bit of show-off. But this is a fun one. Elizabeth was known for being a good dancer and a particularly talented musician. Although she only played for closest friends, she spent considerable time perfecting her renditions of several more difficult pieces of the day. Once her practicing was overheard by an envoy of Mary, Queen of Scots, who, much to Elizabeth's pleasure, admitted that Mary Stuart, though good for a queen, was not nearly as good as Elizabeth was.
Okay. So. I'm like, okay.
It's like that low-key rivalry.
Oh, my God. But there is also a part where it's like, well, what did you think of my playing? Pick-a-doo-doo-doo-doo. And he's like, amazing, Your Majesty. Truly amazing. Be like, my boss is not as good as you.
I know. Well, and I think also it's like, you know, They do show, though, how she knows how to read and play the room.
Oh, I mean, like, even the scene with the oaf and everything, too, of her and, like, Henry, she totally goes and plays into him.
Yeah.
Or it's like,
when Henry gets angry at Edward
for being, like, a bit of, like, a layabout.
And, yeah, she's like, you know, it's not his fault. His humors are out of balance. Like, you should go and, like, consult the doctor and blah, blah, blah. especially when she's dealing with her sister Mary, because mm-hmm. of their very fraught relationship, because basically Elizabeth is like, my daddy divorced your mummy so that he could marry my mummy, and then he killed my mummy because okay. she's a witch.
Okay.
We're accused of witchcraft.
Okay, but I mean, legit. I think that was one thing where, because there was this book that we had. It was called To Be a Princess.
Oh, yes, and it talks about the rival princesses.
Yeah, between Mary and Elizabeth. And I thought that this book does Mary, like, really dirty.
Yeah, well, they don't, because obviously it's from Elizabeth's perspective. So, like, in Elizabeth's mind, she isn't aware that when she was born, Mary was told, you are now a bastard, and you also have to be a servant in your half-sister's household.
It's like, you're gonna go to hell when you die, but we're gonna make your life a living hell right now.
Right now. Yeah, pretty much. And, like, yeah, just being aware of this, like, you're nobody now sort of thing. God. So, but Elizabeth obviously isn't attuned to that. And also, both of them have essentially been punted off to the side because mm-hmm. Edward was born.
Yeah.
Henry doesn't need them anymore. So they're both sort of in the same boat, and you think they would bond over that, but, like, there are some clear lines in the sand, which is, like, Mary actually gives a shit about religion. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, not so much.
Okay, but, like, legit, though, how close to life is, like, their dynamic?
Well,
I'm genuinely curious.
Well, it's hard to say in terms of, like, you know, at the time, we don't know if Mary is saying nasty things about, you know, well, you know, it's the sign of the hair. With, like, you should go as a hare, like, for this costume party. But everybody knows that hares are, like, a symbol of witches. Not yeah. black cats, by the way.
Interesting. Adopt your local black cat.
Pretty much. They've been given a bad and unfair rap. It's actually hares, everyone. So we don't know if, like, that kind of stuff went down. But what we do know is that their relationship, especially after Henry died, was, like, kind of all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had to, like, come together when they, you know, they rallied around their younger brother, Edward, when he became king. He was, like, a boy king, age, like, 16.
And Not even.
And he died age 16, actually.
Yeah, he did die age 16.
He died age 16. So he wasn't even around that long.
He was a virgin. He couldn't drive.
Pretty much.
Oh, God.
But he was almost like a pendulum. So Mary was extremely Catholic. Edward was extremely Protestant, or at least he was influenced by people who are very Protestant. Uh-huh. Elizabeth was like, I'm going to ride this one middle of the road.
Yeah.
So in terms of their relationship, although Elizabeth was next in line in succession, when Mary became queen, she actually placed two other relatives above Elizabeth in her court, citing Elizabeth's illegitimate birth as a reason. Of course, this greatly insulted the princess, but she remained loyal despite her anger. Many people in England encouraged her to conspire against her increasingly unpopular sister. In 1554, Sir Thomas Wyatt, the younger, his rebellion rose and failed. Enraged, Mary threw traitors in the Tower of London and quickly asked Elizabeth, come to London from a royal country home where she was staying. Elizabeth pretended to be sick.
I'm sick. Boo, you whore.
And asked doctors to come see her, thus wisely avoiding the London scene where heads were rolling. Calling Elizabeth's bluff, Mary was like, fine, I'll send my own doctors to you, see how sick you are. But the doctors ended up bringing her to London. On the way, she made sure to let everybody on the street in London see her in order to increase her public appearance and popularity. Elizabeth desperately alleged that she was not involved with Wyatt, but Mary refused to listen to her sister or even read the letters and just sent her straight to the Tower.
Amazing.
But on April 11th, 1554, Thomas Wyatt was executed. But Elizabeth was so popular in the eyes of the people that Mary decided to move her to a more comfortable location, although she would still be kept under close watch. So she basically was sent out into the country under house arrest.
Okay.
Despite constant letters to her sister, Mary repeatedly denied her release. So I feel like the thing that saved Elizabeth was that people, she, like, really liked her. But what destroyed her relationship with Mary is people really liked her.
Yeah.
If people didn't like Elizabeth, Mary probably would have been okay with it.
Yeah.
I think she would have. Because in Mary's mind, Elizabeth was doing, like, she, you know, even if she wasn't wholeheartedly into it when she would, like, do mass or something, she was like, at least she's trying, you know?
Yeah.
So Mary wanted her to, like, at least try kind of thing.
Well,
but I think it's because Mary wasn't, you know, she had been displaced for so much of her life. Now mm-hmm. she's the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she knew how to act well under the pressure of being beloved. And then she made some pretty poor missteps in terms of, you know, diplomacy, because she married Philip of Spain.
Which was not a good move.
Yeah, and he was a king in his own right. And the idea being, like, it doesn't matter if you have the title of queen, people still had this idea of, like, a wife is ruled by her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So how could you still rule England if your husband, the King of Spain, is ruling you?
Well, and I think that's also, like, one of the things that people forget about Mary is that she was, she, like, unless you go and you are Team Matilda, Lady of the English, which personally I am.
Yes, forget Stephen the Pretender.
Wait, this is an anti-Stephen household. But she, okay, but Mary genuinely was, like, the first, like, queen in her own right. I mean, I'm sorry, fam. I mean, like, Elizabeth I is all cool and everything, but I know more about Mary. And there's this great quote about her. That she was the daughter of a king, she was a sister to a king, and she was a king in her own right.
Mm-hmm.
And people didn't know how to handle that. And I think one of the things, because, let's be honest, Elizabeth is smart and savvy, she saw the mistakes that her sister made, was like, well, I'm not gonna go make those choices.
It's true. And because so much craziness happened, basically because of, like, just good or bad luck, depending on whose side you're on, right?
Yeah.
Like, following the death of her father, Elizabeth was third in line for her younger half-brother and her older half-sister. 10-year-old Edward took the throne in 1547, ruling for only 6 years before dying of a fever. Just before his passing, Edward named his cousin, Lady Jane Grey, his successor, bumping Elizabeth down another spot. But Jane was only on the throne for 9 days. Mary succeeded, having Jane deposed, took over the crown for 5 years. Influenza took Mary in 1558. She had no children, and that's when Elizabeth became queen. So, like,
yeah.
A lot of what-the-heck kind of things had to happen in order for Elizabeth to take over, which is why in this book she's like, I'll never rule.
Yeah,
and
I'll never be queen.
But I'm like, that's a legit thing. She's not being modest. She's
no.
like, no, what are the chances?
Well, and that's her... Just, like, quickly jumping back to, like, Jane Grey. She was the granddaughter of, like, one, like, how... They were cousins, right?
Yeah. So, Elizabeth and Jane were cousins in a really messed up... It's in a messed up way because of how young people were when they got married.
Yeah.
So, it's like, Jane was the granddaughter of one of Henry's siblings.
Exactly. God.
And there wasn't that much, like, age difference between them, but it's because of how when Elizabeth was born to when Jane was born to, yeah.
We're now officially flipping.
We're flipping into the back of the book where there's a fantastic family tree, and you can see Jane Grey is actually the daughter of Henry Grey and Frances Brandon. And Frances Brandon was the daughter of Mary Tudor and Charles Brandon, who is her second husband. So, in the Tudors, she is the daughter of Henry Cavill.
Oh my God. What a hot dad to have.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill is her grandpa.
Henry Cavill is her grandpa?
Henry Cavill is her grandpa.
Oh, my God.
Because Henry Cavill had Frances,
okay.
this lady, and then Frances had Jane.
Okay. One second.
So Jane is born in 1537. Elizabeth was born in 1533.
Quick question. How old was her grandmother when she was born?
How old was Mary Tudor?
Yeah. Like, let's just go and, like...
Well, Mary Tudor was born in... Well, she actually died in 1533.
So, 4 years before she was born. But how old was she when she died?
I don't know how old Mary Tudor was when she died. You want to do some quick math for me?
Okay, so if she was born in 1496, she would have been about 37 when she died. So if she had been alive when Jane had been born, she would have been like in her, she would have been a grandma in her early 40s. What the fuck?
Well, and that's the whole thing. Mary Tudor died the year Elizabeth was born.
Yeah. And she, if Francis was born, we don't know when Francis was born. We just,
yeah,
know,
we just don't know when she died. See? Because why would we care when a woman is born?
Or these people are like, you know what? They're not going to be some two random women decades after this book.
Talking about the, like, parsing out this family tree. I want to say, do you want to point out the indignity?
Oh, my God.
In this family tree?
The indignity.
In this illustration.
Okay, oh, my God. So what they do for these books, like, they have, of course, the crown on top of, like, the people who were rulers. Okay. So, Elizabeth gets a crown, Edward the Sixth gets a crown, freaking Jane Grey gets a crown, but Mary doesn't get a crown.
That is pretty rude. Considering, I mean, despite, you know, Mary having a pretty poor reputation, you know.
And she was called Bloody Mary.
Yeah, and a terrible moniker attached to her name. She was a queen, and, like, to your point, like, daughter of a king, sister of a king, died a king.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And I think you're right. She doesn't get enough credit for being actually the first full-fledged ruling Queen of England in her own right.
Well, and
because Matilda didn't actually get a chance to get coronated and, like, rule.
Yeah.
She was just sort of fighting for her right to rule the entire time.
Yeah. Well, and, like, another thing, too, is that, I mean, I think it really does say a lot that we talk quite often about, like, obviously, like, whenever I go, like, Henry VIII was not a good guy. It's like, he was a terrible husband and not a good father. I'm like, yeah, but he also, like, murdered a bunch of his citizens with impunity and waged countless wars. Like, all his children did. So, like, why does only his oldest daughter
get
that moniker?
Exactly. Well, obviously, because there's a lot of factors, because I'm like, you have the religious wars that are happening throughout this. And I'll get into the timeline once Elizabeth becomes queen, and you'll see, like, how many times people try to kill her in the name of religion that you would understand why, if you're like, I don't understand why this is such a big deal. It's like, people are trying to kill me all the time because of it.
Oh my God, yeah.
I think other things that were really important with this book, I'd say three more things.
Alright.
One, her relationship with Robin, aka Robert Dudley.
Yeah, her BFF.
Her BFF, Robert Dudley, who, if you're a true Elizabeth, like, the first stan, and you've watched lots of media with it. Or read a lot of media with it, you know that they are the historical OTP, like, will they, won't they couple.
Oh my God.
And in my opinion, I really hope they will they.
Oh my God, they did they? They?
I don't know. God. Obviously, we don't know, but, you know, she's the close friend, and she was very emotionally attached to him. Mm-hmm. Although she loved him dearly, she was also prudent enough not to put him in a position of too much power. Mm. So she made him master of the horse, an easy decorative office that allowed her to keep him close.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth was very smart in relationships. Like, and I think a lot of times we like to think about how her relationship with her mother and father, like, shifted her, like, perception of, like, marriage, but really it was her 8 years old seeing Catherine Howard at age 17 being dragged away for treason and then having her head chopped off.
Well, she was 21 when she got her head chopped off.
Was she?
I think she was 21.
Okay.
She was, like, a teenager definitely when she married
him. But they were only together for a short while. The point being, though, is that
she saw a young woman.
She saw a young woman who is only a few years older than her.
More of a playmate.
More of a playmate than an actual mother, like, have this happen. And it's like, marriage will get you killed.
Yeah. I think that'd be a little bit more traumatizing.
Yeah. So, and essentially, Robert Dudley had endeared himself to the queen by bailing her out of debt, actually, before she took the throne.
Oh, my gosh.
Because Elizabeth had to pay for soldiers to rally to her and to her cause.
Fair enough.
And so she would pay them on credit. She don't got no money. She's not the queen.
She wasn't a trust fund baby either.
Well, and she's like, if you fight for me, I will pay you when I am queen. They're like, but what if you don't become queen? She's like, then we are all dead. So, as a son of the Duke of Northumberland, who had conspired against Mary, Dudley was imprisoned at the Tower of London around the same time that Elizabeth was.
Ooh.
So, they sometimes saw each other there, but they probably weren't allowed to talk
or
interact. Dudley was famous as a great horseman and a talented dancer. Not surprisingly, the young Elizabeth was quite taken with the dashing character. And a scandalous romance took place between them.
The details, which
remain debated to this day.
Wait a second. Whoa. What are the sources right there?
Well, it was more along the lines of she always was seeking his opinion. She was very much like, where is he? I want him here. Like, and she would let him, he would take quote-unquote liberties with her that nobody else could.
Well, that's like his childhood best friend.
Exactly.
That's so, like people being like, oh, you can, it's like, now that your friend is like the CEO, you can no longer go and like hug them or call them on their shit.
Well, and
like, that's not gonna happen.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, in the eyes of everybody else, it's like, she's turning down the proposals from King Philip of Spain, aka her ex-brother-in-law.
Ooh.
Yikes. Eric of Sweden, Archduke Charles of Austria, French brothers Henry III and Francis, Duke of Anjou. Throughout her life, Elizabeth's one true love remained of Robert Dudley, whose marriage to Amy Rossbart kept the two from achieving her long-desired union.
Okay.
The reason why this is put forward in terms of, like, this guy is actually much closer to her, actually ties into the other thing that is alluded to in this, which is one of the fake characters established.
Yeah.
Her name is Lady Dinsmore.
Yeah.
She's slut-shamed in this book.
Yeah, she's like they...
For having her tits out too much.
Well, and also being, like, really pretty. It's not her fault that she's pretty, and that's her currency that she can use.
Yeah, exactly.
Until
she's ruined by smallpox. And it's basically, like, her life is ruined. Like, she's destroyed. But this foreshadows, because 29-year-old Queen Elizabeth was taken ill at Hampton Court, which was thought to be a bad cold. However, the cold developed into a violent fever, and it became clear she actually had smallpox.
Oh, shit.
Just 7 days later, it was feared the Queen would die. Fortunately, she survived the disease and was not too badly scarred, although her friend, Lady Mary Sidney, who nursed Elizabeth through the illness, was terribly disfigured. She obviously used to, you know, use wigs and application of white makeup, which actually had lead paint in it, yikers,
Try
to smooth out her complexion. But it wasn't as, like, ghastly and clownish as some people show it off to be.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because, okay, obviously we all know that we're gonna go and probably talk a little bit about, like, the Mary Queen of Scots movie a bit.
Yeah, well, and I was gonna say we'll roll into that when we read the Mary Queen of Scots diary.
But, like, the thing is, it's like, yeah, I think, but that's the thing, though. It's kind of funny how her white makeup, her, like, wigged red hair and everything, that sort of just became, like, part of, like, her calling card. Like, that's her iconography.
No, it's true. And that's something that it's, like, she literally became this, like, eternal, almost supernatural figure because, mm-hmm. one, she had reigned for so long at that point. But then, two, it's, like, she can't be killed.
Yeah.
Like, actually. But this is the key thing in terms of Robert Dudley with this.
Okay.
While she was recovering from her illness, she ordered the council to make Robert Dudley protector of the kingdom.
Oof.
And made it clear that as God is her witness, nothing improper had ever passed between them. Because they were like, wait a minute. So, because she needed to name an heir. And they were like, what are you going to do? And she's like, it's going to be Dudley.
Wow.
She's like, it's going to be Dudley if I die.
Holy fuck.
Like, he's in charge of the kingdom while I am trying to not die from smallpox.
Oh my God. Okay,
so when they're saying, like, their relationship, it was very close. I was like, yeah, he was her ride or die. But he was also married. But mm-hmm. he had gotten married, like, in an alliance kind of match when he was very,
like,
young. But that's what everybody did at a certain status. However, the problem was is that Amy Rossbart died under mysterious circumstances. Mm. Well, she was home alone, and she was, like, near stairs, and it was like, did she fall down these stairs? But was it a big enough fall? Did she actually have a tumor? Did she break her neck? But regardless, in 1560, Elizabeth resisted marrying her lifelong friend. Because there was, like, a whole inquiry and investigation. Like, did Elizabeth have anything to do with the fact that poor Amy Rossbart's dead?
Yeah.
And she was found cleared, But then even then, like, Robert's available and Elizabeth still doesn't go for it.
Well, because it's just bad optics. If there's anybody who knows about optics, it's fucking Elizabeth.
No, it's true. And then also, I truly do believe, like, the reason why she could keep Robert and let him be so close to her is because there was always that, buddy's married. But as soon as he wasn't married, then it was like, yikes, how do I actually keep this going when I don't have that protective, like, bubble of, well, we can't do anything, right?
Yeah, well, because that's another thing, too, is, like, even if it was a, we're not going to do anything, but it's for outside appearances, right?
Mm-hmm. But anyways, 18 years later, he actually married Lettuce Knowles.
Okay.
Who Elizabeth was at, it was at, she was actually Elizabeth's second cousin.
Oh.
And she was sort of said to resemble a younger Elizabeth.
Oh, yikes.
Yikes. And Elizabeth was pissed. And she banished Robert and was like, get the hell out. And she was just like terrible to Lettuce.
Uh-huh.
And she was just like, you effing slut, you ruined my life.
I just want to say two things. So, I mean, Lettuce, first of all, doesn't deserve to go and have any more shit because she's named fucking Lettuce.
I know.
But also, I'm like, Elizabeth, how the turntables?
I know.
I'm like, being banished is absolutely terrible in this book.
I know.
And then it's like, when she's older, it's like, well, bitch, I'm a banisher. She's like,
I like banishing. I'm really into it.
Exactly.
She would banish a lot of people.
Oh, lordy.
So, yeah, she would, like, you know, there are plenty of rumors about secret love affairs, mostly to high-profile men. Like, essentially, Elizabeth's like any sort of well-known celebrity person. You know, you go to coffee with someone to discuss something. Next thing you know, it's like, she's banging Sir Walter Raleigh. And she's like, I just wanted to talk about tobacco.
Exactly.
yeah, so then, and I think it's more like, with her relationship with Robert, it also plays into this idea of, like, loneliness. You know, Elizabeth always talks about how lonely she is in this book and how she doesn't really have a companion.
Yeah, except for, like, adults, but that's not the same.
Not the same. And I think that's where, because it's that sort of who can you trust factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Elizabeth was very smart in terms of, she employed that adage where it's like, if you're the CEO, don't be the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
She actually was very good about, like, asking, like, had a group of advisors, and they actually told her, like, this is what you should do and what you wouldn't do. She was also a very cautious ruler. She didn't like, they'd be like, go to war! And she's like, wars are stupid and expensive.
Well, yeah.
I'm not wasting my money on them.
Well, yeah, because wasn't, like, Henry VII, like, her grandpa's, like, a major penny pincher?
He was a major penny pincher, but then Henry was like, I haven't been able to buy Air Jordans my entire childhood. I'm buying all the shoes now.
And yeah, and then he would go and have his massive frat parties all the time with all his friends.
And so Elizabeth was like, yikers, I have no money. Because my dad keeps trying to, like, take over France and, like, a bunch of other stupid wars.
And then my brother and my sister never really accumulated any of that money back.
Yeah, well, because there was, like, besides taxing people, we gotta have other sources of revenue. So that's where she was really into, like, funding exploration and was like, we gotta do global trade.
Yeah, and then she also started up, like, the first national lottery, too, to get people to be, like, chipping in money as well.
I'll have to double check that one because I feel like the national lottery, I know for a fact in France anyways, was invented by Giacomo Casanova.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, because they were like, we need money to be rich. And he's like, he's like, people will love to play at a game to potentially become rich.
Yeah.
And he's like, peace out, France. He's like, you're welcome.
Oh my God, amazing.
But in terms of, like I was saying about her advisors, it sort of being that, the idea of, like, loneliness. Unmarried and at the end of her life, Elizabeth's main advisors had all passed away. In the 1890s, she was in her 60s. The result was a changing of the guard. Elizabeth now had much younger, less experienced advisors. As she was old, some people in the court thought she was becoming frail and senile and tried taking advantage of her. The best example of this was Essex.
Ooh. I know about this bitch.
This bitch is actually Lettuce's son from her first marriage.
Oh my God.
And so...
So is this like, I'm gonna go and take out revenge for my mom? Or
Who knows? Because they had a very interesting and, like, fraught relationship. Because I think he's in his 20s and she's in her 60s. But he was, like, actually, like, into her in terms of, like, he was very, like, it's hard to know. It's, like, was it just about flattery or was it really, like, he was in awe of the fact of, like, she is this powerful woman?
See, I just know him because of the Virgin Queen miniseries. Oh, and he was
bless that miniseries.
And he was played by Hans Matheson, who, by the way, should have a much better career than he has.
I know.
And
he plays hot crazy so well.
I know, right? He plays the villain like nobody else's business.
But anyways, he thought he could get away with anything with the queen because she was like, oh, so indulgent of him, such as disobeying orders. And once he even turned his back on her in court, a big no-no. But she's promptly smacked him hard in the back of the head.
Amazing.
However, her actions proved that although old, she had not lost wits. Essex, in fact, despite it being somewhat of a talented military leader, ignored prudent warnings from Francis Bacon and completely miscalculated how shrewd elderly Elizabeth was. He tried to, like, take over at one point by like, you're too old and stuff. And she was like, the fuck I am. And then she actually, it's really sad. He was one of her last favorites, and she actually had to execute him for treason. Yeah, Elizabeth had to do kind of like really harsh and hard stuff. And, you know, her hand was kind of, it's hard to say. It's like, was her hand pushed or did she like to do this kind of stuff?
Yeah, right.
But it's like, you know, for example, one of the first things she did early on in her reign was doing the acts of supremacy and uniformity. The two acts ratified together meant to settle religious conflicts. The act of supremacy made Elizabeth supreme governor of the church, the authority to make absolute decisions affecting religious practices, and the act of uniformity restored, with some amendments, the Protestant prayer book that Mary had banned. So she was trying to sort of play at both sides.
Yeah.
But she was famous for saying, you know, I have no desire to make windows into men's souls. Basically, if you want to do mass on your own time, do it. Like,
if you want to do Latin mass,
I don't care. Basically, pay yo taxes. We is po.
What a very, like, almost, I hate to say it, modern idea of, like,
I know. She was governing. Just like, I don't care. But, like, I'm going to read you some of the craziness that happened in terms of, if you're like, Elizabeth, why are you so, like, paranoid or whatever about people trying to kill you? A lot of it actually kicks off when Mary, Queen of Scots, returns to Scotland in 1561.
Okay.
And Pope Pius V issues a verdict in Dirk against Elizabeth. Basically, like, she's of the devil, etc.
Great.
Another one, Ridolfi plot, 1570 to 51 plot, led by an Italian conspirator, to overthrow her and install Mary, Queen of Scots, on the throne. This keeps happening again and again, because as soon as Mary is in Scotland, then Elizabeth actually imprisons her after 7 years. She puts her under house arrest.
Yeah.
In 1568.
Yeah, when Mary, like, basically, yeah, she has to go and abdicate, right?
Not formally. She's still technically queen, but she's a queen in prison, so she can't really rule.
Well, we are going to go and double-check this for the Mary Queen of Scots episode.
But it's like, this Italian guy is like, I want to assassinate Elizabeth and use the Spanish army to conquer the countryside.
Amazing.
And then, in 1580, Pope Gregory the VIII announces that killing Elizabeth isn't a sin.
Oh, my God.
So, like, check mark. If you want to kill Elizabeth, like, Jesus is down.
Oh, my God.
There's a Duke de Guise plot in 1582, Catholic plot against her life. Bond of Association in 1584, decree which Parliament forced all Englishmen to sign a pledge that in the event of her assassination, they would hunt down the culprit.
Oh.
Like, that's how much people wanted to kill her, that they were like, okay, we need to have, like, a rule that says, I guess we should try to, like,
Find out who killed her
and, like, get after them.
Amazing.
This was followed by the Act of Preservation for the Queen's Safety. In 1585, policy was intended to squash conspiracies against the Queen and enacted in response to recent plots. Then we have the Babington plot, which, if you watched Elizabeth the Golden Age.
I did not watch Elizabeth the Golden Age. I was tempted to. Clive Owen was there. I saw the trailer. I fought. But then I said, No.
You know what? You didn't miss much. You missed beautiful costumes. You missed sweeping epic music. But other than that, you didn't miss much. Basically, I'll never forgive them for the first Elizabeth movie and how they did my favorite, Robert Dudley the Dirty. Because after, side note, after Elizabeth banished him, she eventually got over it. And she was like, Robert, you're still my BFF. Come back to court. Mm-hmm. And then, like, he was, like, they were friends. He was an ally. And then he died. And it was like, she didn't speak for 3 days after he died.
Yeah. I mean,
she was just like, the hell am I supposed to do?
Okay. Anyways, side note to, ended. Be like, side note ended. Back to poison.
Back to plots. The Babington plot. So the Babington plot, played by, who's the redhead with the lips?
Oh, Flip.
Scalamander.
No, it's Eddie Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne, there we go. Eddie Redmayne tried
How
to kill...
How could I not remember Eddie Redmayne? Oh my gosh, this is also like a test of the D'Urbervilles background. Angel Claire and the other guy played by Hans Matheson.
Oh my god, worlds colliding.
I know.
So, Eddie Redmayne tries to kill Elizabeth in 1586. To again put Mary Queen of Scots on the throne.
What does this woman have? Beer flavored nipples?
Pretty much.
Oh my god.
So Mary, they were just like, this is it. Like, forget this. Like, every single time they're like, tonight, what are we gonna do tonight? Tonight now, Catholics, try to take over Elizabeth's throne and make Mary the queen. So Elizabeth is like, enough is enough. Her spymaster Walsingham is like, look, I'm not saying that she's guilty and she wrote traitorous things, but if there happens to be a letter that her signature just sort of ends up on and it sort of looks traitorous, who's to say?
Okay.
And so Elizabeth is, her hand's sort of forced, but, I mean, after all these times of people being like, dot, 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 we want Mary to be queen.
Well, plus also she kind of sets up a bit of a dangerous precedent, too, doesn't she? Because, like, if she kills another of, like, God's chosen... as, like, a queen, like...
Well, then it is open hunting season on her already, because the multiple popes have been like, you can go and kill her. And that is basically, like, carte blanche, if you love the pope, you can kill the queen. So ugh. Elizabeth's like, I see you, pope, with your religious edict to say you can kill me. And I say, checkmate, I kill your queen.
Oh, my God.
So Mary is executed... And Walsingham, like, basically did it. And he's, like, her spymaster. Who's Geoffrey Rush in the Elizabeth movie and may or may not have been gay in that movie. But I didn't like that because I was like, why are you making this skeezy guy gay?
Of course. Because, of course, don't you know all gay people are evil. I just want to say...
In cinema, not in real life. This is a trope.
Obviously. We're just being clear. I just want to say, though, by the way, major spoiler alert, though, for Mary Queen of Scots, she died.
I mean, everybody in these things is dead,
you know,
okay?
What I
it's
mean.
More like the circumstances under which they died.
Wild.
She didn't die old, alone in her bed.
Yeah. Unlike Elizabeth I,
yes.
I'm assuming.
Like, yes. So at the very end of it, though, Elizabeth had gone through some very good highs, you know, like... They had Spain was their biggest, like, coming for us rival the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, Philip II was like, you bum, you did not go and take my marriage proposal, fuck you. I fucked your sister and I can't fuck you, fuck this.
Exactly. He's like, I will screw you with my ships. And then, obviously, like, the quote-unquote Protestant wind comes and, like, destroys the Spanish Armada, so they're left with, like, an obliterated fleet, and Elizabeth's people are able to, like, get in there with their tiny little ships and pick them off really easily. And this was in 1587, and this is when Elizabeth gives that, like, amazing speech of, like, I may have the weak and feeble body of a woman, but I have the stomach and heart of a king.
So, like, that and actually happened?
Yes, it did.
Like, a variation of that?
A variation of it.
Wild.
It's great. And okay. She wore armor, like, you know, kind of thing. She was like, I gotta show myself.
Amazing.
To be there for my peeps.
Amazing.
But then, during the end of her life, the economy sort of went downhill. Many years of prosperity led to rapid inflation, and Elizabeth, although always stingy and thrifty, nevertheless started losing money as her royal funds ran low. She was forced to sell some property, and Parliament had to appropriate new funds. Yet through it all, Elizabeth continued to worry about the welfare of her people and maintained a profound sense of duty. When several of the monopolies she had earlier granted had been abused, she responded by revoking them in the interest of people. So if someone were to be like, I discovered this tobacco. I should like to sell only the tobacco from me. And she's like, granted, I like you. She was like, no more of that. Yes. Share the wealth.
Yeah, it's not going to be a... Don't be a giant conglomerate.
Pretty much. And she continued to reign with the people of England as her first consideration. Addressing the people, the elderly queen said, though God hath raised me high, she considered her greatest happiness and glory was have to reign in your loves.
Oh.
So, like, the original OG Queen of Hearts.
Oh, my God.
The crucial question persisted. Who would succeed Elizabeth?
Yeah, because she never got married. She did not have any issue. I mean, she had issues.
She had issues.
But not that type of issue.
Side note, I love how historically we call children issues.
I mean, legit though.
To call it out.
Exactly.
I'm just saying. I always love that. It's like, he had issue. I was like, yeah, he had this horrible child. Anyways, so knowing she didn't have long to live, she had contracted a bad cold in March of 1603. She signed a document the day before she died, making King James I of Scotland the rightful heir, even though he was the son of her nemesis, Mary Queen of Scots.
Makes sense. I mean, they were also related too, right?
Yeah. Elizabeth would not sacrifice the well-being of her country for the sake of personal grudges. Although the Stuarts would rule in a way to create instability for England, Elizabeth's action made sure there was like a peaceful succession. Her duty complete, Elizabeth died at Richmond Palace in London on March 24th, 1603. She was actually standing for multiple days, least a day. And because she was scared that if she moved, she's like, I'm not getting up.
Ooh.
So they put pillows all around her.
And
finally she just sort of listed to the side and
died.
Was done.
Amazing.
So yeah, I think in terms of the historical real Elizabeth from facts and like the quote-unquote historical fictional Elizabeth.
There is
a lot of good overlap.
I mean, yeah, I think that's the thing too, though. It's like she was somebody who wasn't. She was supposed to be a boy. She was supposed to be everything, and then she wasn't. And then she was nothing. There were no expectations of her, and then look, she became like the golden age of England.
Well, I think that is the sort of the remarkable thing about her. To your point about like nothing is expected of her. But just because nothing was expected of her didn't mean that she was like, well, this is my excuse to underachieve.
No.
You know, she's like, I'm going to learn languages. I'm going to learn diplomacy. I'm going to, like, recognize who are the smart people I can surround myself with who will help me do a good job.
Yeah.
Instead of, unlike her dad, who he just had his drinking buddies be his friends.
Yeah.
And then he had people who, you know, they were very yes men. When he was like, I would like to... you know, destroy the Catholic Church so I can marry my new girlfriend. They were like, yes, sir, make it happen.
And then the people who are like, it's like Thomas
Moore.
Maybe
we should think about this. He was like, choppa choppa.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I think the thing too, like, okay, sorry for like the, I know like we got to her death, but one, like someone who we didn't talk about that I kind of wish we had talked about a bit, or like, you know what? No, we can talk about her right now.
Yeah.
Catherine Parr.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
because, it's a major plot point in this book actually.
Well, because the only thing that I read, like, here's the thing, fam. Like, I can recall quite a bit about, like, the Tudors, but I do remember all the details. But one thing that I do remember reading was that, like, Elizabeth, when she died, she had, like, this ring that when you popped it open, it had a portrait in it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are like, oh my god, that must be, like, a portrait of her mom. But one of the things, though, is, like, now some historians are like, yo, but the portrait also had, like, red hair, and Anne Boleyn had black hair. The only of Elizabeth's stepmoms or women in her life who had red hair, aside from her sister Mary, was Catherine Parr.
Yeah. No, and it's true. And actually, what's an actual historical thing that does happen in this book is, in true Henry VIII fashion, he was getting tired of Catherine Parr, and he didn't like how she was getting too opinionated.
Of course, because how dare a woman be educated and have opinions?
You know, because he was really into that before, but not anymore. So he actually was going to have her killed.
Of course.
Like some trumped up thing of treason. Thankfully, she had been given the drop before. Like, she knew it was coming. So then she was very smartly able to, like, catch Henry before they could catch her. Mm. And she was like, "You're so smart, and if only women would listen to their husbands, because, like, they're so wise." And he's like, ego, and I guess we can be friends. And then the people who are coming to arrest her, they show up, and they're like, "We're here to arrest you." And then Henry's like, "You assholes, like, I love my wife. How dare you? Who ordered you to come here?" They're like, "You did?" And he's like, "No, God. I never did that in my life." So, but because of that, like, Elizabeth would have known that this had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in terms of that ability to read, you know, survivalist, you know?
Read the room.
Read the room. Know what you have to say. Like,
well, yeah. And I mean, that's what served her well her entire life.
Yeah. And Catherine Parr, this was her second marriage.
I did know that.
She did get married again after Henry VIII. She actually married Edward's uncle.
Seymour.
Thomas Seymour.
Yeah.
Who was kind of a dirtbag because...
Didn't he, like, child molest Elizabeth?
It's debatable.
Oh,
I mean,
Jesus.
It's debatable in terms of, like... So Elizabeth moved in with her stepmother, Catherine Parr, and her new husband, Thomas Seymour. And then Thomas Seymour would, like, do playful romps and, like... "Oops, I happened to come into your bedroom while you may be changing." And, like, yeah, he's, like, the worst kind of skis. And, like, he, like, playfully would spank the princess. But it's, like, she's 14. Like, 14, 15. You don't playfully spank, be, like, a teenager kind of thing.
Well,
especially
yeah.
One in a marriageable age.
Exactly.
And Thomas isn't an idiot. He's, like, "I'm marrying the former queen. What's the next step up of a former queen? A princess."
I like, honestly, that's so gross.
And then at one point, actually, drawing back to Kat, Ashley, she, like, caught this happening, and she told Catherine Parr about it, and, like, was like, "We gotta look out for her." And essentially, Elizabeth was, like, lectured about, like, protecting your reputation, but, like, gossip spread. And the flirtation emerged with his other political maneuvers. And then in 1549, Cat Ashley was actually arrested and taken to the Tower.
Of course.
For possible involvement in his actions. She told her story and was found to have done nothing treasonous and was released 13 days before Seymour was executed. Despite detailed questioning, Catherine did not implicate Elizabeth in Seymour's schemes. Essentially, she was just like, "This is nonsense. Like, leave Elizabeth alone." So, and I think that, I would say, seeing Catherine Howard, her young stepmom, be chopped off her head, you know, when she's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing, like...
Having an older man
come into your bedroom, and who knows how you felt about it one way or another. But then seeing, what are the repercussions? It's very like Buffy. Like... As soon as Buffy sleeps with Angel, what happens? He loses his soul and evil reigns and it all goes to hell.
Yeah.
So, like, what kind of, you know, cognitive connections is Elizabeth's brain making in terms of, like, when people have sex, terrible things happen?
Yeah.
So she's just like, "No, I'm all about that virgin queen life."
And you know what? Good for her.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you for indulging me by letting me tell you all about Elizabeth the First. I hope you enjoyed.
Of course I enjoyed. Also, I mean, my apologies for, like, we started so nicely ending towards her death, and then we had, like, this side note, but you know what? It needed to be her.
It needed to be done, because I think also it would be a discredit to the book, because there isn't a lot of plot drama.
No.
But that is one of the major, like, what is gonna happen, ... things.
Exactly.
Oh, also...
Mm-hmm.
In this book, they talk about Mary dyeing her hair a lot. Like
Mary,
changing her hair color a lot.
The final point. Did Mary actually dye her hair?
Well, I think with the whole dyeing her hair thing is that Mary was... So Mary's mother, Catherine of Aragon, was a redhead too. which was like a strawberry blonde. Mm-hmm. A misnomer every time they're like the Spanish princess is that they make her a brunette.
But she's not. She's not.
She's actually
She had strawberry blonde hair and blue eyes, didn't she?
Yeah, and that's why and Henry was the same. Mm-hmm. So logically, Mary would have had like sort of fair-ish complexion as well and like lighter hair. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that as she was getting older, you know, it's just like through puberty or whatever, your hair changes color and it like goes away. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, looking up hair dyeing in Elizabethan times, I'm like, where is this at kind of thing?
Yeah.
And I was like, true facts, yay or nay. And I do know that fair hair was more desirable.
Makes sense.
Obviously, because it's harder to, it's more rare. Mm-hmm. Like, it's harder to get. So you would have dyed your hair, probably, to try to make it lighter. Mm-hmm. So you would use saffron, cumin seed, cilliand, and oil. Mm-hmm. And that's how you would dye your hair yellow. And wigs were also commonly used. So Queen Elizabeth had a variety of wigs and hair pieces, numbering potentially over 80.
Wow.
So in terms of true facts, did Mary the First dye her hair? Yes or no? I would say she probably did, just like, you know, for purposes of having like a more ideal beauty type. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is neither confirmed
nor
whatever. We don't have like a Mary Tudor's like hair care book or something kicking around.
That'd be a really fun book to read.
Yeah, I know. Well, that book along with like any other doctor books, because 90% of their books were like, you know, their medical journals would just be like, dear diary, today the king had a good looking poop. Like, this is what it looks like. I think he's happy.
Oh, like, my God. Be like, they had a wild like party last night.
Oh my goodness. Like, ugh. The Tudor diet, like, just...
The Tudor lifestyle.
The Tudor lifestyle. Like, oh, man.
Thank God we are not around at this point.
I know. And I was going to say, if you want a taste of what that potentially could look like, highly recommend Supersizers.
Go Elizabethan.
Elizabethan. It's a wild ride. Anyways, hope you had a good time.
I think I had a definitely had a good time.
I had a good time. I always have a good time talking about... like kick-ass ladies, so
yeah, me too.
All right, well, until the next one, I'm excited to hear from you.
Of course, Cleopatra.
Yes, give me that Queen of the Nile.
Amen.
Bye.